There was a line in one of the readings that said Swamiji was he was responding to something that wasn't in the book. He was responding to another part of his life. People who thought that Master was harsh were those who were not didn't have the humility in themselves to accept what the transformation that he was trying to bring to them, because he was often, Swami was often struggling against the interpretation of Master's life and teaching that his Guru Bhais took as opposed to what he took. And one of the things that distressed him so deeply was the increasing rigidity and harshness with which Master was being presented as he became more and more of a dogma and less himself. In 1984, when Swami went to Europe, in that year, he came back with voice recordings of Master in formal satsangs. SRF now has published, you know, a whole series, but at that time, none of those were out. And the only recordings we had of Master's voice were songs, I think it was called Songs and Prayers or something, in which Master was declaiming with this tremendous force, "I, Yoganandam, praying, pray with me." And then he would chant, and there would be all of this. And it was thrilling, scary sometimes, but also thrilling. But then these came, and Master was just in a very normal voice, you know, it's talking about his birthday and how nice it is, and, "Oh, look, there's a cake, and thank you all for coming," and then just conversing as a very loving friend. And Swami was so happy to have those, and we immediately issued them, and it prompted SRF subsequently to issue a bunch more. But Swami says, "This is Master as I knew him." He said, yes, he did at times stand in front of a large auditorium and, you know, move the heavens with the power of his voice. He said, "But this is what I knew, that intimate friend, that just the soul of kindness and consideration at all times." And at the same time, Swami writes in that same sentence, those who thought him harsh interpreted his strength in that particular way. Because Master, being the presence of the divine within us, has to be, on a certain level, absolutely uncompromising. And certainly in my experiences with Swamiji, it was this very strange balance. And the way he behaved was always the way Master behaved. His life was so totally modeled on Master. Nothing of consequence was ever done without it being an expression to us of what Master had given to him. And so he was always supportive. He always had faith that we could do it. But he was also absolutely uncompromising in what ultimately he expected us to do. And so it was always our decision as to where we were going to fit into that. In my book about Swami, there's a story about someone who was determined to do something that Swamiji knew would in the end not bring the happiness that the person hoped it would. And it unfolded nearly exactly in the way he expected. And it looked good for a time, and then it collapsed and caused a lot of suffering, a lot of growth, but also suffering. But the person came in so determined that this is what they were going to do that there was no way for Swamiji to say what he wanted to say. I knew the situation from the inside, so I knew exactly what was happening. So in the end, the person said, So you will bless what I'm going to do? And Swami says, I bless you. I've always blessed you and I will always bless you. Person didn't hear the nuance and walked out and said, Swami blesses my decision. Of course, Swami had very carefully said, I bless you. And he did. And it unfolded as it unfolded. And I don't know whether or not what they ever realized. But all of that, it's not like Swamiji and Master have anything to learn. It's our just gradually finding the courage within ourselves to really just be able to see ourselves as simply and clearly as they see us. And the most remarkable thing about that is when the Masters see us clearly, faults and everything, their response is kind. Their response is realistic. Their response is gentle. I remember I was in a cycle once and I whatever I was doing, I got very off center, which was a cycle I followed many times and have followed many times. I've always pushed very hard, and as a consequence, sometimes I fall off. It's a philosophical decision. Sometimes you can just hold back and make sure you never tumble. Sometimes you can just run forward, and then when you fall, you get up again. Everybody has their way. But I remember I'd been away for a while, and when I saw Swami, he said, Asha, how are you like that? And there was just a way he asked. I many times, I responded too fast and didn't receive what he really wanted to give me. And only sometimes years later did I realize that. In this case, I didn't. How are you? He said. And I remember saying, I don't know, how am I? Just like that. And then very sweetly, he said, I'm worried about you. Which is, I said, me too. And then we made a plan, you know, to put me back where I needed to be, to reconstruct me. But every time when he would come to me with that kind of consideration and I would put up a front like that, it wasn't, he wouldn't be stern in response. He would just sort of step back just that little bit. And the words that he's used and Master used, the world will have to be her guru for a little longer. Here I am ready to help you, but if I don't have the capacity to be helped, then he has to just wait. And will wait, literally, for lifetimes. In that book also, I went with Swamiji once to this church that he was speaking at in Reno. A minister friend who was one of the New Thought churches, religious science or something like that, they had a connection, and Swami periodically would go up to that church. And people were very enthusiastic, but very few people in the room were actually on the wavelength that Swami was offering. But nonetheless, they had the karma to be together. And I vividly remember one particular night, I don't know, Swami went into a very elevated bhav. Something happened and I could feel it. And then everybody came up to greet him. And they were very rajasic. It was Nevada and it was Reno and there was this very rajasic energy. And as I often did, I would stand as close to Swami as I could and just so that I could have a clear sight to him. And I just watched him and he was absolutely outside of this physical world, really. And then these people would come and be in front of him, and they would do something or another. You know, hello, thank you, it was such a good talk, and you'd sort of see them like this, kind of moving. Swami was just like that. And he would just offer what he could. And I had such a powerful sense that how many incarnations had this been happening, that these very souls would come in front of that vibration, the vibration would be there, they would take what they could, and then they would move on, like that. What's interesting, every story in the book I wrote about Swamiji, he read. And he read carefully. He had me go to Gurgaon, where he was living, and I actually lived in his house. They had set up a guest room on the roof. So I was in this tent on the roof of that house. And then he and I worked together to finish that book. But it was very important. He read every word of it. And almost nothing did he dispute. I made one mistake. And one thing he didn't want me to print. Two things he didn't want me to print. So stories like that, where I interpreted what I believed I saw, he confirmed. He confirmed by not disputing, by reading carefully, by sitting with me, by us looking at the words. So I know that's what was really happening, because he was very, very honest, and he did correct me when it wasn't correct. And I was following Swami, so I wasn't like those people who just had a moment. But proximity isn't the issue. I mean, Swami's not in the body anymore. I was just thinking about that, because it hasn't been that long. He's been out of the body about as long as the time that Swami had with Master. Just an interesting parallel, a little over 3.5 years now. I always thought that after Swami died, toward the last years of his life, I felt that his body was inhibiting his consciousness. I mean, not literally, because I don't think his body, he was so far outside of it, but I think his body was inhibiting his work, you might say, and that I always felt that after he got out of his body, let me phrase it differently, I felt like when he was in his body, energy was contained within that body. And the forces of Ananda just kept having to relate to that body in some way. But as soon as that body was gone, it would be like the center of Ananda's work would be in every receptive heart. And his energy would be released from that. And every heart, every individual heart could become the center of his consciousness. He could give to each person the power to act in this world as he acted, is the only way I can think to say it. You know, he had so much confidence in his discipleship. Now, I don't mean to say that in the wrong way. He had so much confidence in being a disciple of Master and what that meant. I mean, himself, he had his time, you know, of doubt and self-doubt and different times when he felt he was more or, you know, he'd moved away. He had his times when he had to move back in and out and learn whatever he had to learn. But he had so much confidence in this path and so much confidence in what Master brought and the importance of it for this world that nothing could shake him. Nothing could shake him in that. And he was always trying to get us to see ourselves in that light, not in terms of how old I am or how long I've been on the path or what I do and don't know and compared to this one or compared to that one. Not at all. But just as a willing instrument. Regardless of our competency is not determined by how articulate we are or anything like that. It's entirely and only determined by how sincere we are in our own hearts. And if there's anything that Swamiji always wanted to give us and would never settle for less, it was to give us the belief in who we really are. And that's what he would struggle against all the time. It was the strangest thing. And the extent to which we defined ourselves by our own limitations, then you felt him, I don't think harsh is too strong a word, but you felt him quietly waiting. I remember one of those incredibly poignant and terrible in the moment and utterly comical in retrospect experiences I had with him once, where I was struggling with one of my super big life lessons, just, you know, one those ones. I called it monkey karma because of experiences in India where the monkeys would go up in the trees and then they would jump down and steal your sunglasses or your sandwich or your apple, and sometimes they would poop on you. They were terrible. And so it was sort of like they were always lurking, and you thought that you were free, and then suddenly there they were again. There was certain karma that I carried that was like monkey karma. Sometimes it was actually literally Swami would just throw it back at me every once in a while. Things, mistakes I'd made decades earlier, he would remind me of them just to see. But this was monkey karma. This was like, just kept thinking I would be done, and then there I was again. And I was so distressed. And he was sitting, for some reason, he was sitting at a table or even a desk, and I was on the other side. And I just said something. I believe what I actually said was, if life weren't so difficult, it would be easier. I think that's actually what I said. Or words that were so close to that, that was the sense of it. Swami just looked at me. It was like he had no expression. There was just like, I could feel the wheels of his mind thinking, what do you expect me to say? And he just, it was like he was in the, to those people in Reno. He just stood there. And I mean, he would, and just waited for me to see if I could figure out what I was supposed to do next, because there wasn't much he could do for me as long as I was going to run a tape like that, you know? And it's an image of countless experiences I've had since then, which are not, haven't been face to face, but just that if I could just find a way to make this easier, if I could just like not really have to deal with this, you know? Life would be so much nicer if I just didn't have to deal with this. Or if I could just keep running ahead of this karma. Just keep frantically running ahead of it. And just hoping that it's just never, I'm never going to have to face it. I'm never going to have the humility to say, wow, I thought I was better than that. But I guess I'm not. But what I've discovered more and more and more is just the more lightly and freely, and I discovered it fortunately before he died, but more powerfully since he died. What am I trying to hide? Who am I trying to hide from? Who do I think I'm fooling? That was a very early experience with him where I just kept trying to have the right attitude, and behind my little plaster smile, I was getting tenser and tenser. And finally, it was a game. He kept pushing and pushing, and I kept frantically trying to hold, you know, this picture. And he just, until finally I just fell apart. And he just smiled so sweetly and said, you never fooled me. Wow. I said, well, that was a lot of wasted energy, wasn't it? He said, yeah. And that's what we have to think. We don't fool each other, and we sure don't fool God. But even more importantly, he doesn't want us to be better than we are. I mean, he doesn't need us to be anything except exactly what we are. And he can't help us until we open that. That's what we offer. Just bring, you know, the wrecked carcass of all our karma and all of our unpaid debts. I was thinking about something recently, and I said, well, you know, I'm certain, and lately I've just, somehow I can see my previous lives more vividly than I used to be able to. And I'm not really going into them, but I can see them a lot more clearly. Just somehow the cause and effect is just happening. And I thought to myself about, you know, a debt that's come due. I thought to myself, did you really think you were going to get away with it? You know, I can see the lifetime in which I set it in motion. And I was having such a good time in complete defiance of Dharma. Did I really think I was going to get away from it? Did I really think I was never going to have to confront my own sorrow, my own failings? Did I really think I was never going to have to do that? Why? Why would God want us not to be free? You know, all that just it's such a weight. So he just peels it back, piece at a time, piece at a time. And the more we just say, here I am, Lord, but be nice because, you know, I'm tender. There's the wonderful story in The Path where Master had a disciple and he called him my baby. He was a grown man. And he said, I call him my baby because I have to baby him. And the disciple, you don't mind, do you? And the disciple said, no, Master, just like that. Sometimes I think that's my role. Just baby me a little. I remember once Swami fired me from a job. He fired me because I was so incompetent. And I was so incompetent. I had this idea at the time, strange delusion of incompetent people, I gradually learned. Incompetent people always have to pretend to know what they're doing, so they never get help and they never learn. That was the syndrome I was running. So I had to pretend that I knew what I was doing, but I didn't. But I would never ask because I had to pretend. That was the whole thing. So he fired me. He fired me on Friday. He did it gently. Why don't we just switch positions? You know, so-and-so could take that one and you could do this, but I wasn't stupid. I knew what had happened. And I said, I believe there's something I have to learn here, but it's going to be hard for me to hear it. So why don't you just give me the weekend off? I said, I'll just spend the weekend being happy and think I got away with this. And then on Monday, you can talk to me. And he said, okay. So I spent the weekend pretending I'd gotten away with it. I had just, you know, been awful, and I would never have to, you know, pay the karma. And then on Monday, and it took me about 6 weeks, actually, to pull myself back together. But there we are. Because they know our potential. And if we're too scared to know it, they'll wait. And all that we have to pray for, the single thing to pray for, just give me the courage to love you and to trust your love. That's the hardest thing, to trust God's love. We practice with each other. But trust is love. It's the only thing you can trust, really. In this whole planet, we all do our best. We all have our own karma to work out. But you can trust his love. Everything else will desert you, but not.